Who can say where the killer roams? When the blood flows, it's slaying time. Slay away. Slay away. Slay away.
To Slay Away, where we dissect horror films, the true events that inspired them, lore, gore, and every kill in between. I'm E.L. King, and on this episode, we'll be discussing Trick or Treat, also known in foreign markets as Ragman, and Death at 33 RPM, directed by Charles Martin Smith and released theatrically on October 24th, 1986. Trick or Treat centers on a bullied teenager, Eddie Weinbauer, who is devastated after the death of his heavy metal idol, Sammy Kerr. As Halloween night approaches, he discovers that he may be the only one who can stop Sammy from making a satanic comeback from beyond the grave.
Wake up, sleepyhead.
It's body time!
Rock and roll will never die. At least not this Halloween.
You've heard of raising spirits from the dead by incantations, right?
Yes.
I did that by playing a record backwards.
You're kidding.
Sammy Kerr. He's a rock and roll nightmare.
I am a big fan of yours. I've got all your records.
Shut up!
You're the bait. The bait is you.
This message, it's meant for me.
How can you listen to this stuff?
To your stereo.
I wanted a new one.
Sammy Kerr. His fans won't let him die. He won't let them live.
You should be loyal to your hero. Make it turn on you.
Or treat.
Looks like we better check out the party punch.
Joining me today are Tim Seeley and Games with Death. Welcome back, everybody. I hope you're ready to chat horror with me today.
Hello. Always, yes.
Always.
So you've both been here before, but tell everyone who you are, what you do.
I'm Tim Seeley. I'm a comic book writer and artist, probably best known for Hackslash and Revival.
Awesome. And Death, you've been here so many times, we're considering making you a co-host, but tell everybody who you are.
You might as well. I am Death. I am a content creator, streamer slash gamer on Twitch. I mainly stream horror games and survival FPS, and a longtime fan of Hackslash, by the way.
Oh, well, thank you very much.
Yeah, thank Death you. Is a huge, huge fan. So I let him come on this podcast so that he could virtually meet you.
I was like, who's going to be on? I'm like, yeah, I'll do that one. That'll
be fun. And so the film we're talking about today was Tim's pick. So Tim, tell us why you love Trick or Treat from 1986, not to be confused with the 2007 Trick or Treat.
Which is a film I also love, but I like this one better. Trick or Treat is a sort of perfect 80s horror movie. It's a one of the heavy metal horror films that was kind of popular in the era. But this one is, more clever, funnier, weirder, and just sort of very unique compared to the sort of other ones, which obviously were a lot of them were done pretty exploitively to like cash in. But this one I think is really clever, and it's interesting kind of what came out of it. Just the people that a lot of people that were in the movie ended up, and one of the guy who plays the nerdy buddy ended up becoming a producer on X-Files, and all these people kind of went on to do interesting things. And also there's a great soundtrack to this film. It's one of my favorite all around soundtracks.
Yes, super fun soundtrack, and we're definitely going to talk about that. And what did you said something and that? Oh yeah, so some of the other films, like I saw Black Roses because they did it on the Last Drive-In with Joe Bob Briggs and Darcy. We can't forget. So I've seen that one, but I haven't seen a lot of the other like horror rock operas, if you will. What are a few other good ones that you would recommend?
Well, you mentioned Black Roses, which is definitely kind of a perfect one. It's probably the one most people remember because it has some of the most ridiculous puppets of that era. There's also Rocktober. What's it called? Rocktober. I have to look it up. That's a pretty famous one. There is, let's see, what's it called? Rocktober Blood. That's the one I was thinking of. I have a whole book of these. Actually, I should go grab it. I heavy metal horror movies.
Oh yes, you're gonna have to share that with me. Is it like a little compendium of all of them? There's so many good books that I've been meaning to get. They're kind of on my book wish list of basically history kind of lists of different types of genres of film, like splatter. But well, jumping into a little bit more about this film, there's not a lot of it available on the internet, but it was filmed in North Carolina. I know that much. And Trick or Treat stars Mark Price and Tony Fields. And then there's special appearances by Gene Simmons and Ozzy Osbourne, which I was actually surprised because when I heard that they were in this movie, I thought they were going to have bigger roles than they did. But both are pretty funny. At least Ozzy Osbourne's role is quite funny. It is actually the directorial debut of actor Charles Martin Smith, who has a cameo in the film. Now, as an actor, I have no idea what he's popular for. He actually is in a lot of stuff, I think, I didn't know if it was... he's in American Graffiti. Yeah, so he's like a good... Well, I guess well-known actor, but I'm like, these are before my time, right? So at least a little bit.
Make me feel so old sometimes. All right.
Oh my gosh. I think you and Tim are like the
45,
same 45,
which is the perfect age to have seen this movie when it, like, I think I was 9, I think, or 10 when this came. 9, yeah. So it's like perfect age to see this movie and then have probably overly nostalgic feelings about it. Though having gone back and watched, it's like, no, it holds up. It's one of the best ones.
Yeah, no, I'm same age, and I watched it, and it's kind of creepy because the lead actor is the spinning image of my brother. Like, it's just
I forgot.
It's so freaky. Like, I have a picture of him, and I need to dig it up somewhere. But it is just him looking like the lead guy, and I'm just like, I've sent him this movie and been like, I didn't know you did acting in the 80s. So
was Skippy on Family Ties, right? Or is it?
Okay, yeah,
Family Ties. Yeah. Charles Martin Smith has a cameo in the film, and the screenplay was written by Rhett Topham, who also wrote the story with Michael S. Murphy and Joel Sizon. I'm not quite sure, but so interesting stuff about Rhett Topham. Okay, so he was an avid fan of horror movies and hard rock music as a kid, so both of those passions are obviously predominantly featured in his script for now the cult classic Trick or Treat, which we're talking about today. And he went on to write the screenplay for 976 Evil in 1998, which I think doesn't have was that directed by Robert Englund, I believe. Yeah, I think it was like I don't think he's directed a lot, but he directed that one and it was like a major flop. Not in part to any of them necessarily, but that's what I recall reading about that film. So he also wrote the teleplays for two episodes of the horror anthology series Freddy's Nightmares in 1988, which I have not seen those.
Oh, it's, yeah, I've seen it. I actually have it on, like, I have the, somebody back in the early days of comic conventions, you could get TV shows that were like, you know, no longer available. So I have it like on a crappy burned DVD, and it's quite something to see that show. It's because it's like Freddy's sort of like a horror host in that one. But it famously has like, they show the origin in a way that they sort of never did before. You know, they show when he gets burned and stuff, and they kind of do that in the first episode.
Oh, that's exciting. Okay, well, obviously I'm never going to find it. I got to say, some of those really cool TV shows, maybe they weren't around for a long while or it was a shorter series, are so hard to find, even stuff that came out in the 90s. So Topham said that, and this is a quote from him, Topham said that horror exists in every nook and cranny of this world. There is always horror just waiting to happen. I'll tell you, though, real life is still the best canvas for horror. More things happen here that are so shocking. It's like, I look forward to being padded by a horror film. All that gross stuff makes me feel safe. Real life is far more shocking. So I thought that was kind of cool.
Read that before, and I think I used it sort of as a, I've said that before, like the nice thing about horror is like, you know, the things you deal with in the real world, you have no control of, but you get to decide when you push pause,
right?
You know, on that VCR or that DVD player or whatever. So it's like you're scared, but you have control, and it makes the elements, like, it's like stress relief, you know?
Right. Yeah. I mean, that's why horror is such a coping mechanism for so many people, because you can experience these horrifying, disturbed, atrocious things in a safe space and like know that you're okay at the end. So I know it's one of my coping mechanisms, or like that's how I got into horror, I think, in the first place. But production wise for the film, so what I read is apparently that I don't know if they go by WASP or WASP, but because I'm not familiar with rock of that time period. Tim, do you happen to know?
WASP, but yeah.
It is WASP. Okay. So apparently WASP frontman Blackie Lawless auditioned to play the role of Sammy Kerr in this film. And he almost got the role. Just a second.
My daughter came in to check on something. Sir, can you go with Mama? I got to do a radio show. I see that. Oh, that's very cool. Very nice. So that's okay. She got really excited about Nightmare Before Christmas. So that's all.
Yeah. Well, it's that time period for the next 2 months of hanging out with Nightmare Before Christmas on the TV, I'm sure. which part was I at? So he almost got the role and was offered to do the whole soundtrack if he got the part. So only if he got the part. But apparently Smith told Blackie that they got Fast Way to do the soundtrack and that he'd have to lip sync to them. And I can understand why he probably was not into this. So he refused to do the role and told Smith that he didn't need Fastway's music when he had his own band. His band is pretty okay. I listened to a couple of their music videos, or I watched them. And so this film apparently contains a post-credit clip. And I couldn't remember if we watched that. Death, I don't know if you remember, because Death and I watched this together very late at night.
I just watched it. Yeah, there's a small little snippet of Ozzy Osbourne saying it'll turn you into a pervert or something like that.
I don't think that's true, though. So as far as critical response goes, the film, like I said, is now considered a cult classic. Trick or Treat has a 75% approval rating from critics on Rotten Tomatoes. So there you go.
It's pretty good for a horror movie. Yeah.
It's Rotten Tomatoes is the Bible of film critique. Or at least where we can find the rating. So I was like, that's actually pretty good. And of course, these things didn't exist at that time. So that's aggregated and pulled in, I think, from people who started reviewing the film in like the early 2000s. And the audience score is like 62%. So they're actually really close. It's hard to find some that are like exact. But critic Alex Sandel said, I loved metal music when this came out. Hence, I loved the film. Yes, it's trash, but it's special trash to me. So, Tim, how does that sentiment about the film resonate with you?
I hate that thing where, like, some things are, you know, super serious. We must treat them as high art, and then other things are trash just because, like I absolutely hate that sentiment. So screw that guy. But I get it. I mean, it's absolutely
good.
You know, it's an exploitive, you know, it was made just sort of cash in and.
Yeah, on what was going on in the time period, for sure. I think Death and I, when we watched it, had talked a little bit about the whole Satanic Panic thing. Like in the 80s and heavy metal, and like this plays into that so well.
Yeah, that's a big, I mean, that's when they, you know, that having Ozzy play a priest is like a pretty, you know, because Ozzy was famous.
An affront.
The time of the PMRC, Parents Music, something with, I can't remember the whole thing, but Tipper Gore's group that was going to, that kind of, you know, they had the hearings to, see if there should be some kind of rating system that would warn parents if there were swear words or if there was Satanism. And so, like, this is all part of that, and they do it pretty tongue-in-cheek by having, you know, Ozzy, who's the sort of poster boy for that time of, you know, famously eating, biting the heads off bats and kind of stuff. Like, from him being the priest and being the holy roller thing is like a genius little bit of, you know, sticking it to the man. So they knew what they were doing in with this movie.
I think it's kind of obvious too of what it's playing into. So in that way, I felt that this was a horror comedy, but then at the same time, the script in general and Eddie's story has like a very serious tone. I think at one point Death and I were talking about, is he gonna,
it gets really dark.
Is there self-harm happening at some point in this film? Because it does get really dark. But kind of back to the reception of the film, there was a Daily Dead review that I found by Scott Drebbit, and they said that Trick or Treat opened in fifth place at the box office, which I'm like, that's not bad. But he, I think, considered that not to be good. So he said critics were more forgiving of the film, and it even had garnered some mildly positive reviews at the time for the performances and the music. And I do agree. I think the music and the performances, if you don't like anything else about this film, they're great. I liked the makeup special effects for the film in addition to those things. But they also go on to say that from 1983 to roughly 1988, heavy metal was incredibly popular with the mainstream public, selling millions of albums and filling up stadiums worldwide. It was on the wane when Nirvana popped up in 91 and kicked rock in the balls, forever leaving the high bouffants and lipstick lovers in the rearview mirror. Looking back, there was innocence and a sense of pageantry, and sadly a fair amount of misogyny to this particular area of music. But it was fun, rebellion, and no one got hurt. So I think in Trick or Treat, what I would see just from that review of the film, that I guess Eddie would be the symbol of sort of naivete and innocence, while the pageantry is really on full display every time that Sammy Kerr like manifests on screen.
And Sammy Kerr, I was thinking, is so interesting about this, because the guys who always were the lead singers of those bands were like, you know, it was always notorious about like how these guys are sleeping with all these, you know, Vince Neil and Bret Michaels and, you know, they, like the whole thing was they were just getting ass everywhere. And then they cast Sammy Kerr as Tony Fields, and he's this like beautiful gay man, which I thought was always like some subversive stuff too. Like that whole quality of it is such a weird little, and I don't know if it's like a purposeful sort of send up, but I always enjoyed that particular part of this movie as well.
Yeah, and I like particularly, and when I talked about the makeup effects, I think that what they do for the character of Sammy is great. And throughout the film, I think every time he manifests, he looks dead or like more fucked up as time goes by. And remind us, Tim, how does Sammy Kerr die?
Hotel fire. He was killed in a, I think, kind of playing off the idea that all these rockers would trash a hotel room. The hotel room got revenge. And killed him by burning down around it.
And this is when he's like staying outside of town because he wants to do this, not tour, but this like special concert at his old high school.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. Okay. Yeah. And so to me, conspiracy theory here. It's like, did someone set the fire on purpose to keep him from playing at the high school?
because right, I mean, that's kind of there's like know. The that's supernatural.
Like the only way I'm going to get to play is if I am dead and I rise up from hell, maybe.
Well, didn't his closest friend, the guy that gave Eddie the record and the tapes and stuff, is like, here, take this, play it. And then like they had this plan to actually like enact it, like play it over the radios and make sure that it was played at this thing. So like maybe
I don't know. And I wasn't sure about that because I know. So DJ Nuke, which is played by Gene Simmons, right? Which that's like the most normal I've ever seen him look.
And he can actually act too. I was I was surprised. I was like, why is Gene so good at this? He missed his calling. Really did.
He was going to play Sammy Kerr, right?
But he is a good actor. He's in Runaway, which is pretty good. And then he's also in Never Too Young to Die, which is a pretty solid movie too.
Okay. Yeah, so conspiracy theory wise, though, is that what happens? Is Nuke setting Eddie up and this whole thing is just like some big type of conspiracy? Because isn't he the one who like plays the tape over?
Yeah, he gives him the copy, right? He gives him the. But like Nuke doesn't seem like a very conflicted guy, really, right? He's kind of like a. I don't know. That's an interesting take.
But then like Eddie can't get a hold of him the rest of the movie. Gene- Which is weird because he's the local DJ.
I'm just going to get Gene Simmons to show up on. But,
yeah, I'm like, maybe Sammy killed him. I don't know. We just don't know. We don't know. So, yeah, I mean, that's why I can see. Because Eddie's also like, he's sort of a misfit, right? He's the bullied kid at school and he's into rock. And he's like kind of the, I guess he would have been the substitution for what's emo later on, right? But I didn't see him as like a pathetic character, if that makes sense. Like he didn't seem like a sad, weak character, although there were definitely those really dark like undertones where Death and I were like, is this kid going to do something to himself? Is he going to do something to other people? Like, are we getting into, you know, the late 90s of it all?
Like the high school violence kind of thing. Yeah. Like there was some of that, and it was like, this is getting, yeah, there was some of, like, I think that the shop scene after they chase him down, that was like very, very violent. And there was the moment where he was like hesitating to turn off the machinery. That was,
yeah, he definitely has moments of like, he has to choose between the good decision, the moral decision, I guess, or the bad decision. Because he's angry and probably rightfully so. These people are jerks, right?
It's totally an 80s kind of thing, like that sometimes these stories would be the things that later we would like associate with Columbine or like a white male rage, because there's stuff like this. And then, you know, then obviously the adult side of it is like falling down with Michael Douglas. You know, there's like, you used to sort of have sympathetic white male rage characters. And that's probably because it's before, like, we had these very publicized, you know, this white male rage turned out to be a thing where a kid killed a bunch of people or, you know, somebody shot something up. It's like a weird part of the 80s to have these sort of protagonist of people we would later totally consider a bad guy.
Yeah, it's interesting to sort of look back on Eddie that way. And maybe that's why Death and I were kind of viewing it in that respect, because we'd never seen the film before. But of course, these other things had happened by the time we watched it. So you could kind of see that reflected in Eddie.
And it's also, I think, like, I really enjoyed the fact that Eddie was kind of counter-opposed to Tony Fields or Sammy Kerr, sorry. Because he's, you know, Sammy Kerr is that guy that was bullied in high school, went out, made it big and had all the success and all that kind of stuff, but then came back and wanted to kill a bunch of people at his high school. You know, like, it's kind of interesting. They're kind of they're kind of set up against each other in that sense.
Well, and they're meant to almost mirror each other, too, because Sammy wants Eddie to do the same thing that he didn't get to do by not, you know, dying and not being able to play at the high school, right? And I think that's him coming back and giving like the big fuck you to everyone that like picked on him in high school, right? Everyone wants to go back to their high school reunion and say, look at me now, right? So I think it's a little bit of that.
And he comes back in the coolest way possible and puts on this really awesome concert. And then he's just like, ah, okay, I'm just going to supernaturally start killing people.
I'm going to disintegrate everybody with lightning bolts.
Yeah.
Oh my God. So, and we'll talk about that. So where did I leave off? So Drabbit goes on to say Trick or Treat failed at the box office, apparently. So it played it too safe. We were already in on the joke with the music as teenagers, but horror doesn't wash with timidity. Otherwise, we may as well be watching an ABC after school special. We were expecting the devil himself, or at least a formidable minion. So I can kind of see what he's saying with the fact that, like, you sort of expected the only real kind of like scary gore about this is the I don't know if this is the right word. Decrepitness of Sammy over time. There's not really like any kind of like the cool gore that came out of the 80s, right? And some of those really interesting gore effects, like what you get at the end during what is a cool concert scene is just like lightning bolts. So that's a little bit of a disappointment, and it like goes for the very PG-13.
Yeah, it doesn't have like, it's not a stabby movie. There's not a lot of that kind of gore. I actually never really noticed that about this movie. That it's, of all the heavy metal horror movies, it's probably the least gory, because they usually, you know.
Yeah. Like Black Roses is super melty.
Right. There's like melting ears and faces and all that kind of. Definitely.
There's some weird shit in that film. but like it's a fun time, and I think this is a fun time too, but maybe if they had utilized that, or I guess I don't know if they had the budget for lots of special effects beyond Sammy's special effects for just his character, but like even then, like you said, Sammy's like a real pretty dude and isn't very scary.
I think this is interesting thing, because you know, this is like one of those movies where it's like, because I saw it at the time and then had this nostalgia for it, that's never stuff I would have thought you needed. Like, I think Sammy's kind of unique in among these, is that he's not like a burnt up dude. Like, they're always like deformed or burnt up dudes. He is a burnt up dude later, but like, not sort of, he's not angry because he's deformed, right? He's not like Michael or Jason or Freddy, or, you know, he's angry just because everybody's a douchebag, I guess, right?
I think that's like the more Sammy starts to like delve into his demonic side, because I don't think of him as a ghost or haunting someone. I think he's transformed into some sort of demon, right? He's a dark soul. And that's why he starts to look the way that he does. In addition to obviously burning up in a fire.
There is the scene in the car when he appears as a demon to the girl at the end. Remember that?
I remember that scene because I think it's one of my favorites, but I don't really remember what he looked like.
Yeah, it was like some very grotesque, weird, large demon that like starts to devour her and all this kind of stuff. And I think that's the only time that they did that in the whole thing, I do believe.
But the fact that I don't remember that at all is like, it says a lot. So, I mean, I agree that Sammy Kerr, like, he's got incredible style. He's like a fun rocker. He's perpetuating this whole satanic panic craze, but he's not really frightening. And although the film has some really dark subject matter, I feel like it either needed some gore to help with scares. It didn't necessarily need to be scary, but just like something like that, that's a little more splatterpunk, would have probably lent well to it. And then also maybe playing some things up so that there are more comedic elements, because I feel like this would have been more successful box office wise if it had been more of a horror comedy. There's some funny stuff in it, but I'm not sure it's intentional.
I think it's intentional. I definitely think it's definitely doing the, because it's like kind of snarky, like there's a lot of winks. I mean, just the casting, some of those casting choices alone, but like the, like it definitely feels sort of like that era of those kind of movies that came out. Like, this is just after, it's after Evil Dead 1, but it's around the same time as Evil Dead 2, and that kind of was in the air, I'm sure. Like, these guys, you know, like they, that's definitely sort of part of the DNA, I think.
Yeah, well, it's like the same year as Return of the Living Dead, and then right after, 1985 was like a big year for like PG-13 adventure stuff.
There's one scene that's just like very tongue-in-cheek. You know, it's I believe it's Ozzy's talking to one of the other guys, and he holds up one of the album covers, and it's like, it's got Do It Like a Dog or whatever it's called. It's the album cover, and then it cuts directly to a scene of a girl doing exercises in like typical 80s get up stuff, jazzercising on the floor next to the bed with the dog on it, and you're just like, oh god, what are you guys trying to do here? Like, this is this is some pretty
So Ozzy plays Reverend Aaron Gilstrom as a cameo. We only see Ozzy on television screens because he's like on one of those shows as a guest, and I think he has some of the best lines.
Yes.
In the film. He's got some really good ones. But I mean, so we'd be totally remiss if we didn't touch base really quickly on the soundtrack for the film. So all of the Sammy Kerr music was composed by the band Fastway and composer Christopher Young. And in the stack of records where Eddie's mother looks, the last LP is a copy of Megadeth's Kissing Is My Business and Business Is Good.
Killing is my business.
Or excuse me, Killing Is My Business and Business Is Good. I
wish Megadeth had made that album that you just described.
Yeah, I was like, kissing is like, yeah, I mean, we're getting busy. And we're murdering everybody. But so on the walls in Eddie's room are posters of Judas Priest, Anthrax, Raven, Twisted Sister, Motley Crue, Ozzy Osbourne, funny enough, Poison and Kiss. And there's a picture of the band Lizzie Borden in his locker at school. Christopher Young, who helped to compose the film, later composed music from Hellraiser, Hellbound, Hellraiser 2, The Gift, Urban Legend, Ghost Rider, Spider-Man 3, Drag Me to Hell, and The Uninvited. So he keeps it mostly horror, and I can appreciate that. A lot of those films are, the scores are a pretty good time.
Yeah. And also, so Fastway, as a band, was like not huge in the U.S. because they were British. I remember this was like the album I first heard them on. And then I think after that, it was like, you know, they weren't like in the same sort of, at least for Americans, in the same breath as like Motley Crue or, you know, Van Halen or Black Sabbath or something. They were like a little bit more obscure, I think.
Yeah, I haven't heard any of their stuff beside that. But I wanted to ask you, what are any of your favorite tracks that are on the soundtrack? Because do you have the soundtrack, or did you pick up the soundtrack at the time if it was available?
I've had it for many years. I think I had it.
I'm positive that Tim has this. So.
It's a great soundtrack, even independent of, you know, it being part of this movie. But it's like Fastway is not like as nearly sort of you know, like gritty sort of metal as something like Iron Maiden or you know, Slayer or something like that, which was also sort of doing bands at the same time. So it's kind of funny that this is kind of a glammy, you know, like most of the songs are pretty glammy, really. Like they're not, none of them are particularly satanic or anything. But my favorite one is After Midnight or Tearing Down the Walls. Those are my two favorite, I think.
Okay. Do you recall where they come in at in the film?
One of them, Tearing Down the Walls, I think he's playing live at some point.
Okay. That could be at the Halloween dance.
Yeah, that's the one. Yeah, that's Tear Down the Walls. That's because it starts off with the drum beat. It does the dun 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 dun. That's Tear Down the Walls.
Okay. And I don't remember. I mean, other than obviously when Eddie's listening to stuff or other type, a lot of times the music comes in and it cues in when someone's actively like listening to the cassette tape at some point throughout the film. So even though like obviously other Sammy Kerr music is available, that's probably playing on the radio somewhere. But to go through a little more of like the film and just walk through the scenes a little bit, the one thing I saw is Sammy Kerr's first lines in the film are, go bear these tidings to great Lucifer, say he surrenders up to him his soul, so he will spare him 24 years to give me whatsoever I shall ask, to tell me whatsoever I demand, to slay mine enemies and aid my friends, and always be obedient to my will. I'm like, is that like a whisper at the beginning of the film, or is that like full on one of his lines? Because I can't recall. And I, to me, that sounds like making a deal with the devil, right?
Yeah. I don't remember. That's doesn't sound like the way the character talks. That's very,
Would that be part of the lyrics that it was played?
I feel like that's something that came up. It could be lyrics from the beginning of the film, but it does say that these are apparently Sammy Kerr's first lines in the film, or it's the first time the character in some way speaks at all. So it could either be music. It could be something, maybe an overtrack during like a maybe intro video montage or something like that. But I don't remember it specifically because I don't think that Sammy appeared and then said this to Eddie at some point.
Definitely not, yeah.
I feel like it's something where it's sort of an introduction to the film, potentially. So, but yeah, that's like I died and made a deal with the devil. So maybe it came sometime after the, or right before this fire would have occurred. We don't see it, unfortunately, because that would have been really interesting.
The fire you actually do see. Yeah, you do. So he has a dream after listening to the record for once, and then you actually see the fire, and he's like, it's pretty, like, I guess the fire scene is kind of indicative of like a satanic ceremony or something, because he's sitting in the middle of a circle. There's no pentagram. I would expect that there would be a pentagram.
I totally forgot about that.
Gosh, but there's a circle on the ground that's burning in fire, and you can see him sitting like cross-legged, and he's like chanting while everybody's burning around him. So
has to be where this is from.
Yeah. Then,
because I think it sounds like he was being told by the school board or whoever that he couldn't come play at the high school. So he literally sacrificed other people and himself, made a deal with the devil, and I think decided the only way that he's going to get to do this is if he came back as like some kind of a demon. And then he gets to play at the high school and do lots of murder.
Actually be that the lyrics are backward, or that is backwards because of the way he says it is backwards as well. So it's, you know, the old, and that's been around since what, like the Beatles in the 60s, right? Like if you play a record backwards, you can hear them talk about Satan or something like this.
Yeah, that was the whole Charles Manson thing that he taught. Instructions and Helter Skelter and all that sort of like, you know, that all the rock panic that has gone on since the beginning. And then those bands like Motley Crue were just like, oh yeah, totally buy this record, buy lots of them, play it backwards. You should definitely buy several because you might wreck it when you play it backwards, you know. It was just cash.
Yeah, that's the best marketing tool in anything, is that somebody can call you an agent of Satan, because people will buy that stuff any day. Yeah.
Oh, totally. It's like, oh man, I heard comic that books this was like
we're also that as well.
I had to get it, you know. But so there's a lot of like epic scenes in this film. I didn't expect it to be quite as dark, like I said. But Tim, what are a few of your favorite scenes from the film?
I mean, just overall the scene where his friend, who played by Glenn Morgan, who eventually went on to produce the X-Files. What's his name? Roger Morcus.
It is Roger. Yes.
Yeah. He's so awkward. Like overall, I think the one when I had seen it and what kind of held up for me still when he tears down all the posters in his room, when he's just sort of like it's really visceral in that moment, you know, like it's just like it feels. And I think you mentioned like parts of this sort of feel more like darker and realistic than the rest of the movie. And those are kind of my favorite ones, when they're kind of like, you know, kind of getting close to something pretty, pretty visceral. Just in general, Mark Price in this, I think is really good and kind of, underrated. And then of course, I think that the scene where we get rid of Ozzy, is pretty great. And now that I think of it, probably the reason Ozzy's never seen in a room is he was probably like over in England or doing a show somewhere. And so they're just like, hey, it's okay. You'll only be on TV. Like, you don't have to show up on set.
Death, what about you?
I think there's a few. The one thing I mean, obviously, like, I think the scene in the car with the girl listening to the cassette
tape. That's one of my favorite ones.
The
bully's girlfriend listening to the cassette tape. I think I can't tell if this is before or after they've had sex, but she's naked, obviously, because it's the 80s.
Well, yeah, like she gets undressed by the demon and all that kind of stuff. And I like, that's one of the things where I kind of go, like there's, I don't feel like there's that like raw sexuality inside of a lot of music. Like I don't listen, like, I mean, I'm kind of like stuck in the late 80s, early 90s kind of things when it comes to my music, because it's just like, I find like contemporary stuff just so fucking boring. Cause there's no like sexiness to it, you know?
Oh, my friend, we have to introduce you to Lil Nas X then.
Oh, all right. Maybe I am missing something, but it's like, yeah, I liked this, like rock and roll was a really sexy kind of thing. And, you know, I dug it a lot.
Well, that's why it's the whole who I know this quote is from a band that I know, the whole sex, drugs, rock and roll thing. Right. I don't know where the saying came from. But it's that. Right?
Yeah, it's that.
Like rock doesn't have any sex in it. Rock is like all sort of just boring corporate, like you said. And now all the badass stuff is in hip hop, right?
That's yeah.
Like if you see that Lil Nas video, he did a video where
he like slides down a pole from heaven to hell, right?
Yeah, like he does a video where he gives a lap dance to the devil.
Yeah, it's like
a gay lap dance to the devil.
I can't believe you missed this, Death. But yeah.
I need to see
you
this. All right.
Social media at the time. I know you tweet and you don't do anything else on Twitter.
I pretty much, yeah, that's pretty much what I do.
But it was like a real big deal for a while, and I think.
Which is yeah,
someone
which is,
was probably trying to get the song or the video banned.
Like I have, like I like, I mean, yeah, like I really like, I got no problem with hip hop and stuff like that. It's not something I necessarily listen to, but I like, you know, I miss that era of the 80s being like, I remember this was like very like big hair, sexy kind of stuff going on. And it was like, you know, I guess this is like, you know, young man sexual awakening kind of like moment where you're like, whoa, this is kind of cool. And it's like, you don't really, I don't see that anymore in like a lot of rock music you see, but I love that scene. I thought it was really, really well done. And I'm also a big cheeser for like, you know, like you did get to the point where, you know, the high school like thing where he was like coming back and you're like, he's playing on stage and everybody starts clapping. And I'm kind of like, okay, I really actually dug that scene a lot. Like very, very like,
I like
this is rock
scene.
And roll movie kind of thing. And he performs and the song is really great. And it's like the crowd's into it, you know, and then it gets turns to a horrible thing. But I was like, that was fucking cool. That was really fucking cool.
But Sam is like definitely personifies that like sexy glam metal stuff.
Yeah.
That even I'm into. Like I was super into Def Leppard. And I love like Pour Some Sugar on Me.
Yeah.
And I like some of the more, I guess, demonic rock too, but like I definitely like that poppy glam metal from the 80s, the hair bands, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, that scene in the movie is like, I think they even played like the full song too, which is kind of,
I think,
you know,
so in the Halloween dance scene and like throughout the whole scene he's doing murder. But then I'm like, Sammy, why are you messing up the other instruments and stuff? Like you're playing a concert, man.
He got his dream.
At some point he is like destroying the stage, which I get is like this very stereotypical rocker thing to do. But yeah, I don't know. So at one point Sammy Kerr says to Eddie, you should be loyal to your heroes, they can turn on you. And I think that might have been like a big line from the film, but to me that reads like an allegory for like every cult that I've ever heard of or seen in a horror film, or you know, a horror film has been made about. And it's always that one person at the top of the cult, right, that's like idolized and held up on a pedestal by the flock. They're getting away with all these atrocities and dark deeds, and like that was kind of who I think Sammy was trying to be for Eddie. And I think in some ways that's how we can look at a lot of musicians that are idolized and they have these big followings that sometimes can become a cult following, especially now in the age of social media.
Well, that was part of that satanic panic fears that was going around at that time, was just like before, you know, things like, you know, conspiracy theories and stuff turn people into, you know, like cult adherents. There was this fear among parents and stuff, I think, at the time that like that these guys were going to, you know, steal their children away and because they were so passionate about the music, which is funny to think of now, because it's not like there's any like massive group of terrorists inspired by, you know, Vince Neil or something. But like that was certainly like a big fear of that time, that, you know, that those kids, if those figures like Ozzy or somebody said something that the kids would do it because they love the music so much, which is like such a naive fear now to think about, you know, that anybody would follow any band to that level, instead find some message board and then become obsessed with politicians instead, which is kind of so it'd be so much better if it was musicians. But
yeah, this whole phenomenon too continues way up into the 90s. I think it
Paradise Lost, right?
Yeah, it harkens back to that like whole Columbine thing. I remember Marilyn Manson talking about Columbine, yeah. And he was like,
listen to Marilyn Manson before they did that.
Yeah, and it was like, it's not about the music. It's like these are kids, you know. This is like, you know, high school is a horrible time. Like if you look at it, like you look at the contrast of it, of the fact that this kid who likes heavy metal is going through this bullying, this humiliation, literally having himself be taking pictures of like nude and stuff like that. And it's like, and then, you know, nobody listens to them. It's not the music. It's the systems that they create, and they create around these kids that, you know, they're looking for some way to redefine themselves as opposed to the absolute living hell that they have to live otherwise. Right. So, yeah, it's just kind of interesting that way. I really think that
not a good justification for murder, obviously.
No, obviously not, but I think this movie's kind of funny because it plays into like, what if it actually was like going back to that, how the I'm going to forget the names. I'm so bad with names. How Eddie is like counterposed is set up against Sammy. It's like, okay, Sammy could be that guy that like, you know, he forms this like, I am now the cult master, and he enacts violence on people like everybody else has been enacting violence. And it's like, Eddie's just even that much more good because he's not a part of the other system that destroys him, but he's now also rejecting even another system that is hurting people and stuff like that. So Eddie's like set up as doubly as a hero in both senses.
Interesting. I didn't really see all that when I was watching it. But then again, like I said, it was really late and we were watching this movie and we were both kind of like, whoa, like what is happening?
I think I was very stoned at the time too, by the way. Yeah. So, it was great. Yeah.
So, yeah. We watched it after we did the regular horror movie night that we do on Death's Channel on Twitch. And so that it was already like late at night. So that's probably part of it. We were both like in that zone. But yeah, I mean, it was still a good time. I would almost, if we could watch it as one of the movie nights, I would watch it as,
I mean, I don't know if we could or not, but I like to speak to a little bit about how we actually had to find it. Like, yeah. This is, I'm really surprised as to why this movie.
I told Tim, I'm like, I can't find bigger. The movie. We can't do it. And then I was like, never mind. We found it.
Yeah. We found it on YouTube. Obviously this is not like legal, you know, this is Fernando Paca or whoever it is. He's got 1,000 subscribers and he just posted the movie here on YouTube. And it's obviously ripped off of the VHS. And it's like, why is this movie not more popular?
The quality was really good though. Dude,
And I've never seen the reason for this. But it was a hard movie to find for a long time. And the version I have is like this crappy, like early 2000s, like 2003, 2004 release. And the cover is just a picture, like a press photo of Ozzy and then of Gene Simmons. Like it's not even.
That's so weird. Like, cause it told me, it said that there was a 2014, like 3-disc collector's Blu-ray that came out.
I've never seen that. That's really interesting.
And then there was supposed to be a 40th anniversary release, but then that got canceled because of some distribution thing that was going on.
Yeah, I think this movie, for whatever the era, and maybe because it wasn't a huge hit, and maybe because of some other stuff, like it's not something that is in active circulation, even in like the early 2000s and stuff. And now, obviously, with everything.
You can buy the DVD from Amazon, but there just was not enough time for me to receive the DVD before.
It's not streaming anywhere, right? It's not on Netflix.
No, it's not streaming anywhere.
Yeah, which is, there's actually, I remember, and maybe it's the heavy metal movies, but Black Roses was like that for me too. Back in like 1999 or 2000 or something, I was looking for Black Roses and I finally found it at this video store that was going out of business. And they just had a copy of the original, you know, big box VHS version. Like, that's the only way I had back Black Roses for years. So a lot of these, for whatever reason, are just kind of, and I don't think Black Roses is on anything.
It is. It's streaming now. Well, it's streaming after the Joe Bob Briggs thing.
Okay.
For sure.
Okay. Yeah. October Blood. The Thor John Michael Thor movie, which is another heavy metal movie, was really hard to find for a long time. That's Heavy Metal Nightmare, right? Is that the name of it? Let me just make sure I got that right.
Didn't you have a VHS collection?
What's that?
You have a VHS collection?
I do, yeah. Mostly just like weird, hard to find stuff. I got rid of a lot of them, but I kept, you know, Black Roses, and I kept a lot of that
stuff. Send me a photo.
Another one to watch if you haven't seen it, if you can find it, and it did have a recent, release is Rock and Roll Nightmare, which is...
I've heard of that.
Yeah, it's this dude, John Michael Thor. He looks like Thor. He was Thor before Chris Hemsworth. And it's very similar. It's got the demons and stuff. But it's just this starring in kind of an inarticulate guy who looks like He-Man, who looks amazing. And it's, you know, he's
fighting. Oh, he does look good. Oh, man. And look at the makeup on that guy. Good too.
But it came out around the same time. And it was also
1987, it says.
Yeah, 87. It was also incredibly hard to find. It definitely got, somebody gave it a release, like, you know, Vinegar Syndrome, or somebody released it at some point, and I was able to get a copy on DVD. But these, for a while, like, because I have like little mini collections of various kinds of movies I collect. Like, I don't collect everything, but I do collect heavy metal horror movies. And I collect like weird 80s fantasy movies, you know, like Conquest or.
So since recording this podcast episode a while ago, we've got news. Cineverse is giving horror fans something to scream about this spooky season. As of October 27th, Trick or Treat 1986 is now streaming on Screambox exclusively. So that's where you can watch the film. Well, one of my favorite, that same year, 1987, one of my favorite fantasy releases was Masters of the Universe. Oh, so
my specialty is Masters.
Big fan.
Yeah.
I really liked the Skeletor representation in that one.
Oh, hell yeah. That's
It's so good.
He's just a good old time playing Skeletor for sure. But that, like, that little weird era of stuff is like, for a while it was almost impossible to find it. Lately it's a little, you know, some people have given them releases. But yeah, it's interesting that for whatever reason this Trick or Treat has this never, you know, just kind of like was abandoned by distributors, or wasn't enough demand, or but I'm glad somebody put it on YouTube so you guys could watch it. The studio doesn't care that you saw it that way.
No, I think actually it came from the DVD release because the quality was really good. So yeah. But
just to go back to that cover art a second. This is not even the same movie by the cover art that's on the DVD. It's actually incredible. Like, it's like there's a skull in the background. Like, I don't remember when we see that. And Ozzy doesn't even look like the priest he's dressed up as. But he's like the big draw on the cover. And Gene Simmons looks like he's going to a gala or something like that.
The most cynical thing where they're like, oh, no, I love this movie. Just put those two guys on it. They're famous. And yeah, it's like they're just press photos or something that they bought the rights to and photoshopped together.
We need one of those Gutter Garb t-shirt images we just found the other day.
Yeah. Which I immediately ordered.
Yeah. Which one did you get? I think the first one is the best one. Sammy, and then you've got the girlfriend with the headphones on. That one's really good. And I was actually surprised to see a whole t-shirt collection for this film.
Yeah, and again, that's
leave it to Gutter Garbs to have it.
That's a relatively recent thing that people are kind of finding this movie. So maybe we can help inspire more people to see it. And it'll
go and see if you can find Trick or Treat 1986. And I do want to know what everyone else has to say about it. But before we wrap it up, I will say that the special effects for this film were created by Kevin Yeager. And so he went on to provide the effects for Freddy Krueger, funnily enough, and the Crypt Keeper from HBO's Tales from the Crypt. So I thought that was kind of interesting, considering that the other ties into essentially the Freddy Krueger universe that this film and the director have, not the director, excuse me, the main writer for the film. Rhett Toppin, Topham. I think also, Jaeger has a cameo in the movie. He's the lead singer and guitarist for the band The Kickers that play at the high school Halloween dance.
The other band, the one that
the other band, yeah. The band that actually I think that Sammy like interrupts their set and takes over, right? Okay. I think Sammy must kill that guy then, because I feel like that's what happened. And then the title of Sammy Kerr's unreleased album Songs in the Key of Death is a play on the title of Stevie Wonder's 1976 album Songs in the Key of Life. I thought that was a little fun factoid. Like, for all the albums to do it with, it's the Stevie Wonder album. So.
See, that's where you start to be like, no, this movie knows what it is. Like, it knew the intent.
Then I'm like, okay, yeah. I think that maybe it's just the comedic elements and the jokes. Like, you really got to be paying attention. You can't be stoned out of your mind like death or like super late at night tired like me. You got to watch this like and have your full attention on it, because they're just definitely there. I could pick up on them, but I was like, oh, it's like, I'm like, is it a comedy, is it a horror movie? Like, where am I at here? Because it really also kind of feels like a darker version of Teen Witch a little bit.
I really think you need to watch it one time stoned and then one time, you know.
Well, I'll work on that.
Yeah. So we need to do all movies from now on.
But this is the part of the show where we talk about our bloody knife ratings. So a scale of 1 to 5, how would you rate this film?
I mean, I'm the one that picked it. I'm the one that always tries to push it on people. I'm the one that when I rewatched it, I was delighted all over again. I got to give it a 5. I understand that it's not for everybody, and that it may read as a little bit sort of cheesy compared to stuff, but I just think it's a rare treat, and it's just kind of a, you know, it deserves to be remembered, I think.
I kind of got to give it a 4, if only for the fact that I think sometimes it knows what it is, but I think some other times it doesn't know what it is. Like it gets very dark in certain spots and it doesn't, but I definitely give it a 4, and I would have given it a 3, but I give it a 4 because it actually makes cassette tapes look cool as opposed to vinyl, you know, because as a person who experienced most of this music through cassette tapes and not through vinyl. Cassette tapes are the unsung heroes of the metal era, and vinyl takes too much of the credit. I'm sorry, it just does.
I had cassette tapes once upon a time. I'm a little younger than you two, but I'm not that young. I gave it a 3.5. I'm looking at Letterboxd right now. So did I write a review for this film? I have no idea, because if I did, it was right after we watched it. But most people give this like, you know, a 4 is kind of the overall rating. And I could see that from like a 75%, you know? So, like overall, I think this is a much loved, you know, metal horror film, and more people should definitely watch it if they can get their hands on it. The only service listed for having this film is Amazon, and you can get the DVD. Also, you can secretly find it on YouTube. I don't know if I can promote that, but maybe it could be on YouTube if you look up videos on YouTube. But anyway, Tim and Death, thank you so much for joining me to talk about Trick or Treat 1986, a film without Tim's recommendation I would have never seen.
I had to pick one that I knew you wouldn't see, because this is not easy. This one, I've been singing its praises for so long, and I just know that every time I bring it up, people are like, you mean the one with Sam Hain? And I was like, no, not that one. Like, not the one with Anna Paquin, the werewolf.
I only just saw that one last year. I'd been meaning to get around to it for a long time.
Also a very good one.
Yeah, very good movie.
I'm looking up copies of this on eBay, by the way. And there are copies. There's one called the Ultimate Comeback version, which looks pretty good.
That might be the 3-disc collector's edition.
Yeah, I don't know. Don Blu-ray doesn't know if it has anything else, but there's also a German import where the movie is called Ragman. which is
yes. So this is known by two other names, actually. And I'm gonna do that in the introduction I record later. But it's known as Ragman and Death at 33 RPM in other countries.
Wow, Death at 33 RPM is terrible, but Ragman is pretty solid. Not as good as True Treat, but. Yeah, it's pretty good. Yeah,
exactly. But, you know, it's one of those films that if you are looking for a Halloween horror film, this is one of your picks.
Yeah, agreed.
And at least it should be.
I think it really fits, like, this is like a real, like, there's cult classics. Like, people like say, oh, this is a cult classic. It's like, they kind of, like, some distributors label that stuff or they go for that label because it's like, you know, they want it to be more expensive. I'm like, this is really a cult classic. Like, this is so esoteric in a lot of ways, and because of the distribution and the popularity of it, that you really have to dig for this. So this is, I like this hidden gem, so thank you, Tim.
Yeah, anytime. I'll get you on. You should definitely check out Rock and Roll Nightmare and Rocktober Blood if you get a chance.